You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The board game Monopoly celebrated its 80th anniversary yesterday. As the story goes, it was invented by an unemployed repairman named Charles Darrow, who based it on Atlantic City, where he had summered as a child. It's a classic rags-to-riches story. The only problem is that it isn't entirely true. In her book, The Monopolists, Obsession, Fury, and the Scandal Behind the World's Favorite Board Game, New York Times reporter Mary Pallon explains that it was actually invented by a young secretary named Elizabeth McGee. Her book is published by Bloomsbury. I'm very pleased to welcome Mary Pallon to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Don't you write for the Times sports section or
board games? I'm a freelancer now, and I write mostly about sports and business, long-form narrative things. So all over the place. But I would argue board games are a nerd sport. So I think I'm still it's all related to me.
And then, of course, as you said, you wrote about business. And what is Monopoly about but business?
Exactly. And this whole book, this whole project, which took about 5 years, was a Wall Street Journal fact-checking question gone totally awry. I, like everybody, thought that Monopoly had been invented during the Great Depression. I grew up playing the game. I love the game. And then I was looking, and I was going to have it as like a throwaway sentence in a story, but at a place like the Journal, you know, accuracy is extremely important. It's everything. And I was totally frustrated. I thought, here we are. It's 2009. We're writing about derivatives and investment banking's imploding and all these things. And I can't find out the truth about a board game. You know, what kind of idiot am I? And I came across Ralph Anspach and his lawsuit. And he said, no. There's a whole history to this game that doesn't start in the Great Depression with a man, but a woman in 1904.
Elizabeth McGee, who was known as Lizzie, you learned... How much of her story did you learn initially from the Anspach case?
So at first, it was really interesting. I knew that she existed. I knew that she had this patent for her landlord's game in 1904. She renewed it in 1924.
It's called the landlord's game.
The landlord's game. And very soon after she invents it, it goes viral, like turn of the century style among a who's who of left-wing America. And people start calling it the Monopoly game. And you look at the 1904 patent, and I was like, oh my gosh, it has go to jail. It has free park instead of free parking because cars aren't as great of a concern. In 1904, it has the railroads. I was like, this is the guts of Monopoly. And started researching kind of in tandem to a lot of the research that Ralph Anspach had done, who this woman was and trying to connect the dots between her patent and the game we know today.
She's a rather remarkable woman. She published stories, performed in theater, was an engineer.
Right. She wore many hats. She wrote short stories.
She invented a gadget for typewriters.
Exactly. And her father was a very influential newspaper owner. And not just that, but he also had interesting political roots. He had traveled with Abraham Lincoln during the Lincoln-Douglas debates. So understanding who her father was actually became important to unlocking her story and her politics as well.
Because her politics were influenced by the economic theories of Henry George, the political economist.
Exactly. And I wasn't as familiar with Henry George before I started this project. And most people, if you pulled somebody off the street and said, do you know about Henry George and single tax theory? I don't know if you'd find a lot of people.
It's a generational thing.
Right,
my father read Henry George.
Oh, wow. Progress and Poverty, I guess, his bestseller. So he was a big deal in his time. I mean, Progress and Poverty was this very influential book. There were all these amazing news accounts of George filling in these like packed halls with his lectures. He was a very charismatic speaker. And he actually ran for mayor of New York City and came in second behind a Tammany Hall candidate, but ahead of this Teddy Roosevelt guy. So he wasn't just some, you know, wingnut. I mean, what he was saying really resonated with people.
And that book supposedly sold more copies than the Bible, at least for a while. He was a supporter of the land value tax, also known as the single tax.
Correct. And the idea was that you tax land and only land, and I won't get into the weeds with it, but they also were very concerned with the monopolists of their time. They, like a lot of folks, were really concerned with income inequality. And what I find so funny about reading Henry George and some of Lizzie McGee's writings at this time is they seem almost peeled from the newspapers today. You know, a lot of the same things that are being bantered about, how much to tax people, what do you tax them on, the relationship between the, you know, extremely wealthy and the middle class, all things that they were very concerned with.
And George influenced a wide range of people, Winston Churchill, but also Leo Tolstoy.
Exactly.
And, of course, Lizzie McGee.
Yes, and so he ends up kind of being this accidental grandpa to Monopoly, and she makes the landlord's game as a teaching tool to show how this all works. And board games at the time were often used for educational purposes.
when we look at her game, how close is it to the modern game?
So it's pretty close. But one of the things that happens over this 30 years before Parker Brothers starts making the game is people product test it and they make it better. So, for example, the Quakers of Atlantic City, they put the Atlantic City properties on. People made the board their own. There were Philadelphia versions of the game, New York versions, Boston versions.
And they were making their own boards as well? She was not manufacturing the game, was she?
There were a few, but by and large, it was a folk game. So people made them out of wood, oilcloth. They painted on their own properties. And one of the things that the Quakers do is there was originally a lot more auctioning in Monopoly, and silence is a tenet of their faith, and they decide they don't like the auction system, so they put fixed prices on the board. They make it a little more simple to play with children. So by the time it gets to the man who sells it to Parker Brothers, it's Lizzie McGee's game, but with some, you know, some added things to it.
As you said, it came to be known as Monopoly. In fact, the Quaker community gave it that name. In 1929, a teacher named Ruth Hoskins moved to Atlantic City and brought Monopoly with her after she learned it from friends in Indianapolis, and she taught it at a Quaker school where she met a fellow teacher, Ruth Harvey, and then Ruth Harvey helped spread the game. All these names have been lost. But these are key figures in the history of the game, aren't they?
Right, absolutely. And I mean, Lizzie McGee's name was lost. She died in 1948. She did not have any children. And her obituary, as far as I can tell, makes no mention of Landlord's Game or Monopoly. And that was one of the things that was so interesting about researching this book, is that I think there's a lot of these people who chip away at the world and kind of make it what it is. And we don't stop to think and, you know, realize what their contributions were. There's so many people who are lost. And in researching this, quite frankly, I was surprised at how much of this survived, that Lizzie McGee had a patent, that there were news articles about her. I mean, researching somebody who's famous for being obscure is is definitely a challenge. But the Harveys, the Quakers, a lot of these folks, it's amazing to me their stories survive at all.
My guest is Mary Pilon, P-I-L-O-N. Her book, The Monopolists, Obsession, Fury, and the Scandal Behind the World's Favorite Board Game. Okay, so let's talk about Charles Darrow. How did he first learn the game?
So Charles Darrow learns the game from a friend, Charles Todd. Charles Todd runs into Darrow's wife on the street. They had gone to school together. This is in Philadelphia. And Todd had learned the game through the Quaker group that we were just talking about, the Atlantic City Quakers. So they invite the Darrows over for a Monopoly night. They play the game. And Todd, you know, Darrow asks Todd for a copy of the rules. And Todd thinks this is a little strange. He talks about it years later, because it would be like somebody asking you for rules for checkers or chess. This was just a game that people were playing. By now, it had been out for 30 years or so. And it's a version of this game that Darrow starts to sell on his own. And other people had sold flavors of kind of these Landlord's Game offshoots, too. And then it's a version of that, the Todd game, that Darrow sells to Parker Brothers.
Now, Darrow, to some degree, is doing this simply because he's in bad shape financially. And he has an handicapped child as well. So he needed to make some money. But he was claiming that he invented the game?
Right. And I think that and at one point, Barton, who's then the executive at Parker Brothers, asks Darrow, and this letter exchange is in the book, you know, can you write up a history of the game? And Darrow waffles, and there's no evidence that he signed an affidavit. But I think something that's important to look at with the history of this game is nobody knew they were sitting on Monopoly. Nobody knew they were going to sit on a game that was going to be a huge hit. I mean, a blockbuster in the toy and game industry is rare enough, let alone a perennial. So
worldwide.
Exactly. I mean, in the game here we are.
It's popular in Germany.
It's popular in the UK. I mean, that's what's been so fun about writing the book, is hearing from people around the world with different versions of the game. But a lot of these decisions, I think we can look back in hindsight and try to say black and white. But there's a lot of gray. There's a lot of gray with all these characters and what they decided to do.
Well, there's a lot of images associated with Monopoly. Who created the early drawings for Darrow's Monopoly?
So Darrow had this neighbor, F.O. Alexander, who was a political cartoonist at the time. And I had actually heard about him. I'd written a story for the Journal about Monopoly, the Wall Street Journal, and some of his descendants had contacted me and said, you know, we think this relative of ours was involved with the game. And I started looking at census records, and it soon became clear that they actually were neighbors. These families were linked. And the art for this game, and then later Parker Brothers had a commercial artist who worked on it. Again, this was an afterthought, all of it.
But Parker Brothers turned down the game initially.
Correct.
What so changed their minds?
Darrow had started selling the game on his own at Wanamaker's in Philadelphia. And Sally Barton, who was the top guy at Parker Brothers' wife, hears about it. And it goes back. But even at the beginning, Parker Brothers didn't think this thing was going to sell. I mean, there was a bunch of reasons why that were legitimate. It was about finance and real estate at a time when most Americans had little of either.
Great Depression.
The Great Depression is in full force, and the idea that people would want to play this, it was thought to be too complicated, too wonky.
And I've always wondered why it was so popular, because players can be eliminated fairly soon after the game begins, and then you're just sitting around when everybody else is playing.
Right. And Louis C.K. has a really great joke about how a Monopoly loss is particularly brutal, because it's like, not only did you lose, but I'm going to take everything you have. And, you know, he goes on about this, and I think that's totally true. Anybody who's played with their family knows that.
Well, obviously, Lizzie McGee was alive when all of this was happening. How did she respond?
So she was not pleased. In January of 1936, so this is right when Parker Brothers is at the height of the Monopoly craze, and these games are selling like crazy, she gives two interviews with two Washington papers where she lashes out at Darrow and Parker Brothers. And she's an elderly woman, and there's this amazing photo of her where she holds up her landlord's game and the Monopoly board and says, you know, I was around before. This was my, I have a patent. It's not even like I didn't put a claim to my idea. But unfortunately, beyond that, there's very little evidence that her story got a lot of traction. And I think the Darrow, you know, Cinderella story of him inventing in his basement was so romantic to people at the time. And the company continues to tell versions of it today. And so she had a lot of headwind because his story was so great. And she, at this point, you know, didn't have as much oomph.
So she sold the landlord's game to Parker Brothers. That was a way that they could just bury the story?
Correct. So the what we believe to be true is that she sells this game for $500 and no royalties.
$500.
Right. And that one of the interviews I just referenced from 1936 argues that if you can count fees and things, that she may have actually lost money.
She sent a letter to Parker Brothers with titled Farewell to My Beloved Brainchild, where she described the game as being like her own child.
Right, right. I mean, these games for her were very much about, she has this pattern in her life of her trying to express her ideas. She's a very outspoken feminist. She's very outspoken politically. So when at first Parker Brothers strikes this deal with her, she's excited. She thinks the, you know, one of the most important game companies out there is going to publish my Henry George teaching tool. And Henry George at this point was dead. His movement was losing some steam. She's excited, but there's no evidence that they put a lot of muscle behind this or the other two games of hers that they promised to publish.
Does Hasbro, which currently owns Monopoly, now credit Lizzie as the game's inventor?
It's very strange, to be totally honest about it. I mean, they acquired Parker Brothers in the 90s, so obviously a lot of this history happened long before then. And a lot of times what I see is like the corporate retelling, the timeline will just start in the 30s, which is ignoring 30 years of history. So it's kind of one of those more selective storytelling things.
Isn't one of the problems for Parker Brothers or Hasbro that this game was invented kind of as a critique of capitalism, and now it's come to be seen as a celebration of capitalism?
I don't know if it's a problem. I mean, I think what's fascinating is the true story. And I mean, obviously, my job, my role is to tell the story. I'm a journalist. I'm paid to get it right. But their job is to sell games. And what I find strange is I find the true story to be fascinating and ironic and interesting. And the fact that it was designed by a woman is incredible. And you know, I can't even tell you how many people I've heard from in the last few weeks who've been fascinated by the true elements of it. So I don't know. I mean, I think that the fact that there's still this resistance is really strange because it's so long ago, to be totally honest about it.
Well, yesterday, Monopoly supposedly celebrated its 80th birthday, but should we have been celebrating its 111th birthday?
Yes, I believe so. I think so. I mean, that's celebrating when the company started making it, but that's very different than when the game actually was born.
Mary Pilon's book is The Monopolists: Obsession, Fury, and the Scandal Behind the World's Favorite Board Game. It is published by Bloomsbury. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.